You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Notre Dame fans, and welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 408, here to recap Notre Dame's one-point loss to Georgia. 20-19, Georgia was victorious. Randall's here as well. Randall?
Yeah, it was disappointing, but really, I think everybody's overreacting.
I think so, too. Who expected Notre Dame to go undefeated this season?
No one.
Exactly.
2 months ago, everyone was predicting 9-3, maybe even 10-2. But even if you predicted 10-2, one of those two losses was Georgia.
It wasn't for me, because I think...
For a lot of people.
Yeah, I know. Because it was at home, I did think Notre Dame would win this game. And I thought USC, I know, also a home game. But either USC, Miami, or Stanford would be a loss. I still think Notre Dame can get to 10 wins in the regular season.
They could. I'm still sticking with my 9-3 prediction. Because I had predicted Georgia and Stanford.
Then who else?
And then I said there was going to be one more in there, okay. Just some random. I said either, you know, it could be a Miami or something like that. But we were all hopeful after the first week. I mean, we did predict a win. You know, I think going into the game, we didn't quite expect as much from Georgia as what we had earlier in the fall.
Let's talk about where we were right and where we were wrong.
Well, I just want to say this. Everybody just needs to relax. It's a one-point loss to a top 15 team. It's an SEC team. Notre Dame had good defense. That's what everybody talks about the SEC. They have good defenses. But their offenses, you know, is what always struggle. That's what Notre Dame technically look like an SEC team on
maybe,
Saturday.
Maybe their offenses are great. It's just the defense gets swarmed.
So for all the – my thing, for all those that wanted Les Miles to be the head coach at Notre Dame, this is what you would have got.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So some things that we expected, and then we'll go through the different position groups. I did expect Notre Dame to really struggle running the football. Not to the extent that they did. I thought they'd have a little more success, but I did expect it to be tough and that the game would have to be won passing the football, and they just weren't able to do it. And when we go through the position groups, we'll dedicate blame to where we think it should go.
Yeah, and I think what went wrong was maybe how Notre Dame went into the game. Brian Kelly mentioned after the game that they wanted to attack the secondary. That was their plan. It was to pass the ball and get into that secondary, which safeties weren't good. They had their number one cornerback out, and second guy was supposedly hampered a little bit with a hamstring issue, but you can't do that.
Well, why do you think that didn't work?
Well, I think they went into the game wanting to pass the ball into the secondary, and I think that's part of the reason the offensive line wasn't as aggressive either. I mean, for pass blocking, you don't have to set that line of scrimmage. And I'm wondering if that was really the game plan. Maybe that's why they were so timid. It seemed like they backed away from the line of scrimmage sometimes, the offensive line. I mean, they struggled. They had a terrible time.
The offensive line
was horrible. But, you know, that's what they kept doing. And Brian Kelly says they kept Josh Adams in there because he's their best pass blocker. And so everything that's been said was to the effect that they wanted to pass the ball, attack that secondary. And I think that was the wrong mindset going in. I mean, they could have changed. They would have still struggled. It would have been a huge error. But
here's the one
going
thing.
Into the game.
Here's the thing. They weren't able to run the ball.
Well, I have some theories on that. I'll get into a little more when we get to the position group. The other thing I want to quickly get out of the way as part of the rant was the fans, all the Georgia fans. I expected a lot, but not that many. They claimed there's 30,000 there.
I made the comment after the game, after the loss, that I'm more disappointed or I'm more upset about the Georgia fans experiencing this win than I am about me experiencing this loss. I was more angry about them enjoying it than I was about me experiencing the loss.
Well, okay, so people are supposedly like, it's Brian Kelly. You know, that's why people are selling their tickets or they, whatever. If you're a true Notre Dame fan, people still, like, Georgia fans wanted to go. They don't travel like this to other games. They wanted to come because this is Notre Dame. So why can't the fans do that instead of selling their, getting greedy and selling their tickets? I mean, sell them to the Notre Dame fan. I know plenty of fans that wanted to go, but Notre Dame fans, but then there weren't any tickets.
Well, they didn't want to spend the money.
You didn't.
I wasn't. No, that was some. That was some.
I know. I'm sure they were going to pay. Georgia fans were going to pay a lot more, but it's disappointing. And I'll just read what Kirby Smart's comments were after. He said, "I'll tell you what I'm proud of. I'm proud of our fans. I'm proud of the fact they came out and tons of them were here. The video shots I saw from Chicago before the game and the takeover when we got here, that played a role in this game. We never felt like it was so much of a road game. There were times our quarterback was able to go on his own cadence, which you don't usually get to do on the road. You definitely don't get to do that on the road in the SEC. The fan base doesn't let you do that. We were able to go on ours. A lot of it had to do with the red and black that was in the stadium."
So, I agree. If Notre Dame would have had a home field advantage, it could have been the difference in the game.
It's 1 point, and every little thing counts, and it was a quarterback's first start. You want to mess him up. I mean, he could obviously go on his own cadence. Like, you want it to be so loud that they have issues, and that's when you can rattle a quarterback. The fans can help with that.
Yeah. And a game this close, there's just one more thing needs to go Notre Dame's way for it to be flipped, for it to be a Notre Dame win.
They had a lot of chances. They really did.
They did. They had. I completely agree.
I don't think,
thanks to the defense,
I don't think you could say that Georgia necessarily outplayed Notre Dame. Notre Dame didn't take advantages of the chances they were given.
Yeah.
You play this game again next Saturday, Notre Dame could win. I mean, this isn't like they were. They had opportunities and they didn't take advantage of it.
There's two things that I loved about this game. Field goal kicking unit and the defense as a whole, and then the offense as a whole was bad, and there's specific parts of it. So let's get one of the quick things. Let's start with special teams. We don't normally do that. Justin Yoon changed my faith in kickers.
And I do have to point out, we had guessed how long the first field goal was.
If they would let him kick at a certain distance. Yeah.
Yes. I'd say it was a 42, 43 yarder, I think, that they would let him kick instead of going for it on fourth down. I think, was it a 39 yard?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
But they did go for it, and he made four. He was 4 of 4.
Super impressed, and yeah, not a whole lot more to say. But on the topic of special teams, our kickoff coverage unit is not solid. At least not against Georgia athletes. I thought our punt return coverage was great, but not our kickoff return. Definitely has some holes or has some things to iron out.
And some of the big you still have Dexter Williams did get out on special teams, and he made a big play, big tackle. Tony Jones was very involved again, and Julian Love. I mean, those guys remained very involved with that. I was disappointed with the return game, or the punt return. I think the punt returns was -7 yards, maybe. I mean, it was bad. Fink had no chance.
He didn't, but he wasn't calling fair catch, unlike the week one.
I was scared that one of them was going...
Week one, he was calling a fair catch, and he had 10-yard cushion, and here he catches it with the defender giving him a hug.
Yeah, so, you know, Georgia had a good... I mean, they were punting good, so yeah. It's a combination of everything, but they had no room to do anything on punt returns.
But my only complaint, my biggest complaint about the punt return is that Fink wasn't calling a fair catch when he should have been.
Yeah.
He was being reckless.
Yeah. But we had some hope there for a moment with CJ Sanders' return. That would have definitely, like, it was too good to be true. and it was. But it was good to see that he kept going. Because there were no whistles. He didn't stop. Even though everybody else stopped, I think he gets some credits for keeping the play. I mean, he kept playing despite, you know, everybody else stopped. There was no whistle. He kept going. And that the coaches noticed that. I mean, that'll give him a couple brownie points. So.
All right, let's talk about offense, and then we'll finish up with some good news talking about the defense.
On the kick returns, if you kick it out of the end zone or into the end zone, you don't have to worry about a return.
Yeah.
So Justin Yoon is still doing that. I don't know if Jonathan Doerr is just that. He's just not ready to do it. But I would give him a chance. Said he kind of
hit a wall in fall camp.
Yeah. But it sounded like they expect him to help with that later in the season. But you got to get it out of the end zone.
Okay. Offensively, I think it starts with the offensive line. And again, I think if you'd have a quarterback with more experience, this game probably would have been different. But definitely the offensive line did not make holes for the running backs. But they also did an awful job in pass protection too many times. And I think that's what added to the issues with Brandon Wimbush, because there were times when receivers or running backs were open and he either overthrew them or just missed them.
Yeah.
And then sometimes the receivers just dropped the ball when he did get it to him.
Yeah.
So there's a combination of everything to go around on offense.
Yes. But the thing is, we can blame the offensive line. I feel like we can blame them quite a bit because they are the most experienced. You know, you have two guys that are supposed to be first-round picks that are All-Americans. They got to do better than that. You cannot. Yeah, they were going up against one of the best defensive lines that they're going to face this year. As a defensive line, like the whole unit, this is probably the best line they're going to face. I know Boston College has a very, very good defensive end. So they'll, you know, there's one guy. You know, they'll face teams like that. But as a whole, this defensive line and the linebackers on this team were just insane. But it seemed like they could do nothing. And it was all of them. It wasn't like it was, you know, McClinchy getting his false start. Nelson's solid. They were all bad. I think they all had a penalty, too. And
not all five had a penalty.
I don't think Mustafer had a penalty.
Yeah.
Well, yes, he did. It was kind of his fault. The whole line moved because he didn't snap the ball when he was supposed to, and the whole line moved. I'm not sure who they gave it to. But, you know, even the way the game ended, that was totally Mike McClinchy. And he took the blame for it. But is this offensive line once again overhyped?
Well, before we go into it, I do want to let's read some internet muscle flexes.
Oh, I didn't even look. I didn't even think about it.
Notre Dame football on their Instagram, when they announced that the upcoming game against Boston College would be moved back to 3:30, they posted a picture in the Notre Dame locker room, and the offensive line is in the forefront.
Oh, yes, I saw that picture.
Of the picture. So here are just some jewels. And there's several in here, but I'll just read some of the highlights here. Let's see here. Ryan to the Poof said, "Wow, if we have to wait till 2:30 to watch these losers." And there's more here. What were some of the good ones? No, I can't find. The one said, someone asked what the reason was for the offensive line. What was the reason to move the game back? And the real reason is because of some of the other games are being postponed because of Hurricane Irma. But then someone commented below that and said, it's because the offensive line is such a bad unit, and they use some more strong language in there.
Here's one. It was about the time getting moved as well, except this is on Twitter. Doug Woolum said, "Don't forget to tell the offensive line that it's been moved."
And then here, of course, everyone gets blamed. So here's a final one. "No blame on players. No blame on players. Call a damn quality game. Damn morons. Garbage play calling like the last 4 years."
The problem is with that... We have a completely new person calling the plays.
I know. And especially when you span it over the last 4 years, because I believe Brian Kelly was calling it 4 years ago. He wasn't last year. But then usually what they're complaining about is they don't run the ball often enough. Well, Notre Dame did try running the ball. They ran it 40 times. So it wasn't like some years where Notre Dame was passing it and just going away from the run.
Yeah. It's
they ran it 37.
Yeah. I think it's kind of, there's a lot of people frustrated, and then there's also a lot of stuff going out against the fans too. So I think we all just need to relax and have a realistic outlook on the season. I mean,
the reason I'm optimistic about the offensive line and the offense in general is because I don't think we'll face a front seven like Georgia's again. There's going to be close to as much talent on USC, and there's definitely individual players that are great, but as far as an entire unit, I don't think we'll face just that kind of violence coming at our offensive line. and when our offensive line is able to control the line of scrimmage or give Brandon Wimbush pass protection,
yeah,
we have been moving the ball and scoring points. So I'm still pretty optimistic. I think we'll be all right moving forward. We won't be undefeated anymore, which no one legitimately thought that Notre Dame would be, but I still think we can get, if not double-digit wins, at least close to double-digit wins. Okay. Randall, you had mentioned running backs, and Josh Adams, he was definitely the primary running back, and we did see Tony Jones in there a couple of times, and he did run one time for negative yard, and then Brandon Wimbush also ran a lot. He had 16 attempts. Now, some of those weren't designed runs, but a decent amount were probably, I didn't count them up, but probably 10. And then Ian Book also had his scramble where he ran for 2 yards. But Josh Adams, 19 attempts, 53 yards, a long of 7 yards, averaging 2.8 yards.
Yeah. Did you listen to the post game?
I did.
Reggie Brooks said that while he was at Notre Dame, he never got hit in the backfield.
I heard him say that. And
he said, except in practice, when the coaches told the offensive line to let him get hit because of something he had done. He said that did happen a couple times where he was supposed to get hit, or the offensive line was supposed to let him get hit. But he kind of said it. I'm not sure if he actually said it,
but it's hard to believe that. I don't believe him, but it probably didn't happen very often.
But some of the things like he mentioned was that even for Josh Adams, the offensive line Josh Adams had to make his reads a lot earlier than what he's supposed to. And so he didn't look confident, and sometimes he was cutting off the wrong foot, and he just, everything was just off. And that's why it is so irritating to me that Dexter Williams didn't play. See, okay, there's a couple things.
Okay, and defend it this way, because to me it wouldn't have mattered if Dexter Williams was in the game.
Okay, this is why I think Dexter Williams should have been in the game. You got to switch it up. The one play where Tony Jones, he didn't actually run it. Brandon Wimbush, long of 8 yards, was on a play when he could have handed, Tony Jones was the running back. But he took it himself, gained 8 yards. And it makes it, if you have more than one running back actually making attempts, the defense is looking at two different guys. You're not having the same guy come at you all the time. Josh Adams, okay, yeah, Josh Adams is your best running back. But look at Georgia. They have Chubbs is an insane running back. But he shared time with 2-3 other guys. And you have to switch it up. If you can't run, switch it up. And what is Josh Adams, or what is Dexter Williams' strength? His first step. And the worst thing here was that they were not getting through the holes that Josh Adams, we know he's not the quickest to get there. They didn't have a lot of, I'm just saying, not saying he would have done more.
Yeah, I'll give you.
But it would have helped Josh Adams.
I'll give you that maybe he would have been able to react quicker and maybe avoid a few of those. But Josh Adams was also very heavily involved in the passing game too, including their touchdown drive. He had a big catch right before that.
He did and have he receptions.
He ran hard on that, and he was the only reason he didn't score the touchdown was probably because of the face mask. He was pulled down by his face mask. If not for that.
Okay, so they used him in the passing game. He had 6 receptions for 60 yards, which were both career highs for him. Okay, so who's the best pass catching running back? Fine, you're not going to bring Tony. You're not going to bring Dexter Williams in. Give Tony Jones more chances to carry the ball.
Okay, Randall, aren't you also the guy that's complaining when they have this running back by committee where they mix it up a lot?
Yes.
So then, what do you want?
But try. At least bring a second one in there. Give the second guy a chance. Josh Adams got beat up this game.
There were a few times where he did look slow.
And I'm saying...
But it wasn't often, but there was a few plays I remember where it looked like he didn't have a explosion out of his step.
And there's a... I don't like to switch up. If a guy's doing good, I want to keep him in the game. If he's not doing anything, if he's getting 2 yards a carry, you got to try something else. And even to help him, that's I've always said that Tarion Folston helped Josh Adams.
Please.
And he did. Folston would have helped in this game, and then the Josh Adams could have had longer runs. You got to have a change of pace, and it just makes no sense why they didn't play anybody else. If they're having no success. It's one thing if they would have been having success. But they weren't. And I do think there was times when Josh Adams could have made more runs, but Wimbush kept it. And if Josh Adams would have had the ball, he would have made some more plays. I do think that's some of it too. So some of it goes on Wimbush, but it just makes no sense why you have Dexter Williams. And you saw he had a big hit on special teams. I'm sure you would have come in there fired up. He's waiting for his chance.
I, Randall, let's not forget, I like Dexter Williams. I was the one that was saying he should be the second best running back, or that he will be the second running back on this team when it's all said and done. But Brian Kelly said that they wanted to attack the second level of the defense, get into the secondary. And is that I didn't listen to his...
That was on Sundays.
That was on Sunday. I didn't listen to that.
Oh, no. He said it right after the game. Post game.
Then I'm forgetting it. But did he say that Josh Adams is their best pass blocker?
He said that on Sunday then, I believe. But he's their best pass blocker. But
so sense. That's why he was in there.
I know, but he still missed some blocks too.
Okay, some of those... Alize Jones or Alize Mack... Well,
it's hard to tell because there's so many guys missing.
Well, there was two times in particular. Alize Mack is lined up he's attached to the offensive line, and he runs out for a route and doesn't even chip I don't know if it was a defensive end or a linebacker, doesn't even chip him to slow him down. And one time in particular, Josh Adams, and this might have been Brandon Wimbush's fault because he was watching more of the behind the center. He wasn't even looking over, and then when he did see him coming, he had no time because the rusher was going full blast and there just wasn't time to get over there.
Yeah, well, the one fumble for Wimbush was Adams did try to make it. I don't think he was supposed to actually pick up the blocker. From how I looked at it, Alize Mack should have pushed the guy a little bit, but he didn't. He ran right past and got to make the play. And Josh Adams, I don't think that was his fault. He tried to stop that. But that it wasn't his fault. But there was times that he got blown up. But there at the end of the game, there was was it the last play, the fumble?
The fumble was the last play.
Was that when they had 7 guys in the line and George only rushed 4? They had 7 guys blocking. They had 4 linemen. Two tight ends, and Josh Adams. Josh Adams wasn't up on the line, but they had 7 guys there, and it was a 4-man rush, and they
got destroyed. I don't remember if it was a 4-man rush or not.
It's hard to put it on each position because when we're talking about each position, everything factored in. It was the entire offense.
So we move on and talk about wide receivers.
Yeah, there's not too much more to say about running backs because we only saw Josh Adams. Well, Tony Jones was out there quite a bit.
He was out there quite a bit.
He did not get carries.
Yeah.
But Josh or Dexter Williams did not get one play on the offense.
As far in the receiving game, we already mentioned Josh Adams. He was led the team in both receptions and yards, 6 catches, 60 yards. And he was targeted the most, too. He had 9 targets.
Which, Tony Jones, he had 2 receptions for 9 yards.
Yeah.
But
we did see Fink out there more, and Boykin was out there, aside from the 3 starters. And then even Chase Claypool was out there, was targeted, dropped a ball.
Michael Young was out there.
And Michael Young did catch a ball, 1 catch for 4 yards.
They basically shut down EQ and were making somebody else be that second guy. And Brian Kelly mentioned in his Sunday teleconference he's begging for somebody to step up and be the wide receiver. So,
well, I have a name for him, but I don't think it's a name he wants to hear.
But it showed a little, like, Freddie Kantine is not doing anything.
No. Cam Smith, I like Cam Smith, but replace Freddie Kantine.
Cam Smith, he needs to be. I can see why he's number 2 guy. And
There should have been an interception for Wimbush, but he broke that up. And I don't think a guy like Chase Claypool, a younger wide receiver, would have been savvy enough to make that play.
Yeah. The bad thing was it made the receivers look worse, but on most of the receptions, the throws were off. They either had to go up for it or dive for it, couldn't get it, and then the reception that they did make, they went up, and then they were tackled. I mean, they were not. A couple of those, if the throw would have been right to them in stride, they would have had much bigger gains and maybe even broke a couple. But
I think that starts with part of it is it is a huge game. There's a lot of pressure. It's at night. But then the other thing, too, is they were getting pressure on Wimbush. They were hitting him. They were getting after him. And so I think he was, aside from just being inexperienced, he was also uneasy with the pressure that was coming at him. And for good reason, because the last play of the game gets blindsided. And
I liked how somebody, they said it looked like his brain was scrambled. I mean, he just looked like, he didn't look like a guy that was going to step up and make something happen. He was just trying to figure out what's going on. And Georgia did throw a lot of crazy stuff at him.
He said in his post-game interview, and kudos for all the players for doing their post-game interviews. I mean, that'd be really tough to do. But he said that he felt well-prepared with what they were bringing. But I don't remember if it was Wimbush or if it was Brian Kelly. I think it was Wimbush that said there's practice players that are playing the Georgia defense, and so it's different when it's actually Division I high caliber athletes. Well, because they don't have enough. I mean, the scout team.
Yeah, I know. But with the back to the receivers, who do you think after this game? What are you thinking about? You know, the first 3 guys.
Well, I like EQ. He didn't have a great game, but they were trying to take him out of the game, and they did a good job.
If you would have caught that first pass of the game, the flea flicker, the very first pass of the game, he should have had that.
He should have. But again, that was a little bit underthrown. If it would have been, I mean, it was a good throw, but if it would have been a foot or so further, probably the defender probably wouldn't have got a hand on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we know what we have with EQ. Brian Kelly said it, that he's a stud. The question mark is after him. And I think Cam Smith should be on the field a lot because he didn't have a lot of production last week, but he did have 4 catches for 44 yards, and the coaches seemed to like him. After that, honestly, I think it should probably be Fink until, definitely give Chase Claypool opportunity, but until
he dropped his target,
dropped it. And so until he catches, it's more consistent. And then I guess that should also go with Alize Mack too.
That's what's a little bit weird that, you know, these guys. That's what we said. It sounds like that's happened in practice, maybe with Claypool, but even Boykin, I'm shocked we don't see more Boykins.
I don't think he was targeted. I mean, he was out there a couple times, but I don't think he was targeted.
Well, Michael Young made that one catch, and it seemed like he couldn't. I don't know if the pass was off, but it seemed like it wasn't going to go anywhere because the two guys blocking for him, which was McGlinchey and
was probably a tight end.
I'm trying to think who the other guy was. Right in front of him, and he like didn't have any room to go anywhere. And I don't know how that play was actually.
The only screenplay that has worked these first 2 weeks is one that Josh Adams caught to get them in inside the 10. Yeah. Other than that, the screen game has been awful.
Well, they picked it out. Georgia did a very good job of stopping that. And I think some of it had to do with, you know, they kind of had a guy spying the quarterback. And so he was kind of waiting to see what was going to happen. And so it was easy for that guy to go after the screenplay. But, yeah, I agree. I think EQ, I was number one. Cam Smith, I think he's still going to be the number two guy out there. But I think you got to switch up Freddie Canteen, give somebody else a chance to. And Fink.
It seems to be an option, but he had a drop too.
So you're starting to understand. It makes a little more sense why we're not seeing as many receivers because these guys are dropping a lot of passes.
And I think we've probably said it too, where we coming into the season, we thought our wide receiver unit was pretty deep and talented. Well, so far it's not.
I know. It's sad. But then the tight ends, they seem non-existent in the passing game. I just don't think Wimbush was making it. He didn't have time to make the reads.
He didn't.
And I think that's why Adams was targeted. So he could see him. It looked like he wasn't. He didn't see the guys downfield. I mean, there were times the receivers were open. EQ was wide open, but he was getting pressure from somewhere. Didn't have time to set up and throw the ball. But then Alize Mack actually had a big catch, but then he had another big drop too. I mean,
yeah, Mack finished with 2 catches for 41 yards, had a long of 32. He was targeted 4 times, and I think he just had that one drop, or did he have 2?
No, it was just 1.
So he's improving on his drop percentage at least.
But yeah, I was just surprised. You saw the tight ends, which the tight ends were out there a lot. They just weren't involved in the passing game. I think a lot of that is just due to not having Wimbush having time to make his progressions and see them downfield.
Anything else about the offense?
Well,
I wish we didn't really. Should we talk more about Wimbush?
Yeah. Well, Ian Book was in there for one play. Wimbush's contact came out or had some issues with that. So Ian Book was in there, and it was good to see that they were actually going to let him throw the ball.
I was surprised. I figured they would just hand it off.
That does not happen to Brian Kelly.
A draw play.
That has always been a complaint of mine. Even if it's a blowout, they just bring the quarterback in and run. And I'd like to see, yeah, that makes sense, but they got to throw some passes in game situation. So it was good to see that they were going to do that, but obviously he was being very careful with the ball and not running and actually made a pretty good run.
I know. He looked impressive.
So I don't think we've talked about it before. The backup isn't as, for some reason, it's just easy to think that Ian Book just, you know, is, I think he's underrated. He doesn't get.
I think he's overrated in your book.
Hey. He's basically like Tommy Rees, and he's got Tommy Rees as his coach, so he's set up to succeed.
I did tweet out a question on our Twitter asking what the first play would be, their designed run, pass, or an RPO. And again, people thought that Notre Dame would go with a designed run. Well, it was the flea flicker, kind of like a play-action pass. I'm surprised. Notre Dame has first 2 weeks taking shots deep and early.
Yeah.
And it's just
first 2 games. The one complaint we had, I started predicting it while we were watching the game, that it was always 3rd and long. It seemed like everyone. And you just knew if they were going to throw the ball, they were going to be about 5 yards short of that first down line. Like, it didn't even have a chance, which the offensive line couldn't hold them long enough to get out there. But it seemed that's how the plays were even designed.
Well, but you always, there were other guys running deep, but they probably were covered.
Yeah. So, but it's just over and over, which they're not, you shouldn't have a third and long like that all the time. So,
and just for fun, Randall, what quarter do you think it was before Notre Dame converted their first third down?
Third.
It was, yeah.
And most of those first downs, the reason they got first downs is because of penalties in Georgia. So the Georgia helped bail them out and a couple times, but then there was calls that went the other way as well. But Wimbush, he needs to – he doesn't have any touch on his passes. We've talked about that before, but he's overthrowing. Or underthrowing. I mean, even the out to the sidelines. I mean, he just couldn't float it in there to Josh Adams. Couldn't reach for it, and he's got to get better at that. And I think, you know, we have been spoiled the last couple of years. I mean, with Kaiser, how good he really was.
And I'm still very confident that Brandon Wimbush will develop and he will rise up for these big games. It's just...
Here's the thing.
He's only his second game as a starter.
From Georgia's true freshman that was starting his first game, this year he's played like 6 minutes less than what Wimbush has, which Wimbush obviously won starting job. Mm-hmm. From didn't, but there was a competition down there, and he played most of the first game and the second, and I think we kind of overreacted to that being his first start when he had quite a bit of experience, yeah, you know, in the first game. But Wimbush has got to clean up some stuff, and he's going to get better. He's seen this now, so he's good to go.
Everything else should be a cakewalk.
Yeah.
Did you listen to the post-game interview with Drew Tranquil?
Yes, I did.
I'll just say what he said. It was on the field after the loss. And Tranquil said that he's scared for other teams because Notre Dame's coming to punish them. And then at the end of the interview, he said, he finished off what he was saying with, "We're going to come back next week to punish BC." So definitely from Brandon Wimbush's comments and Drew Tranquil's comments, it does sound like the locker room, it was definitely different. Guys were not happy.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if Notre Dame is able to come out kind of like he said and punish the other teams. It seems kind of dangerous to say it, and then if Notre Dame comes out and struggles against Boston College, that it could be something that the media pick up on or other teams pick up on. But if you do come out and destroy Boston College, it could be kind of a momentum swing going in the right direction.
Yeah. Brian Kelly was not amused when asked, comparing this to last year's, you know, is this still a, you know, he's basically being asked about a one possession game, you know, that they lost again, and he was not amused.
Is that, get to the question.
Yeah. Which I understand both sides. I know people want to know, and at the same time, Brian Kelly's tired of answering it. Like he said, it was 1 point. It wasn't 1 point. It was 1 point, which that is one possession. But he overreacted. He should have toned down a little bit, but I can see his frustration.
He did overreact, but it is true. How do we as fans know that it's going to be different? Because this is what happened how many times last year? Way too many.
There was some mistake. I felt better about this versus games last year.
It was last year.
And you're losing to Georgia. You're not losing to Duke.
Yeah. Duke and Navy.
Well, just like that. Let's not go back to that. This is here. It's a new year. New coaches.
Okay, defense. A lot of good things. We're going to end on a good note. Open field tackling, which Brian Kelly said his safeties could not tackle Chubb and Michelle in the open field. Well, they did. They did a phenomenal job of tackling these guys, even when it was one-on-one. Better than I expected. I expected at least one long touchdown run from Georgia, and it didn't happen.
Well,
they did have some long runs, but
we were worried about them, you know, breaking out one a long play. But if you would have heard that they ran for 185 yards and scored 20 points, would you have expected, if you would have heard that before the game, knowing that's what Georgia's going to get, would you have said they would win?
With
185 rushing yards. I mean, they held these insane running backs. They are good, and they held them to. Chubb had 63 yards, and Michelle had 73. So Notre Dame defense was impressive, and they had three and outs. They played beyond my expectations.
Yeah, you're right. And even at the end when Notre Dame was down, they gave Notre Dame several chances to get back into it and score points, and the offense just couldn't do it.
And even the two touchdowns that Georgia scored they needed help.
Oh, insane.
The one was that one-handed
catch.
Bobbling. I still don't watching it again.
I think it was a catch, and so did the postgame radio show. Notre Dame postgame radio show.
They ruled it wasn't a catch on the field, right?
They ruled it was not a catch. Yes.
There was not enough to overturn. His hand moved,
Randall,
and so it was not enough to overturn that.
I disagree. From the angle that we were watching on the TV, it looked like a catch.
I watched it again. During the game, I was like, well, fine, whatever they called it. But watching it again, I do not think it was a catch.
Besides, all you need to do is just catch it and then step in bounds and then whatever happens after that.
But here's the thing. That was a third down. That would have been a field goal. So they had that. And then the other one was that late hit on the court. That extended the drive. It was third down. It would have brought up fourth down. Then it was a late hit.
But it was also completed, but it would not have been a first down.
Well, here's the thing. The late hit was a bad call. It was his first step. And, yeah, he hit him, but usually they let it go on the first step. It's when it's the second step the quarterback takes is when they call it. But they were probably a little touchy about it because that's how Eason got hurt. It was a late hit out of bounds, and that's what took him out of the game last week. So
I thought that
it shouldn't have been called. Then
here's what I thought. I thought if Julian Okorah would not have pushed him, I don't think they would have called. If he just would have let the momentum of his body run into him as he's trying to slow down. But he did push him out of bounds, and he flew way out of bounds. And when I went back later and watched just the image, I mean, then I kind of felt, well, maybe I was being too critical of Julian because he's in bounds 2 yards, and it was on the first step, like you said.
Here's the thing. When they're back in the pocket and they get hit, watch Wimbush get hit. He had enough time to throw the ball, release it, and still get knocked down. To me, that's more than one step. That takes more time than one step. And he's in the pocket. Here the quarterback's out, which makes it even, you know, then he's kind of, you can hit him. He's out of the pocket. So I thought it was a bad call. But then what made it worse, the receiver caught it, was on the sideline. Okay, what they focused on was his foot. I think that could have been, yeah, maybe he was in bounds. But then when he turns to take off, he turns his foot and steps out of bounds. But watching the replay, they looked at it when it was north and south, basically. And that's where, is it in or out? They never looked at what happened after that.
He was down there, though, wasn't he?
But that would have been down. Well, true. I guess it would. Yeah, you're right.
I thought he was down right there.
Okay, they did.
Plus the 15 yards.
Yeah, but right there was 30 yards.
Yeah.
Should have been a fourth down, and instead it was a 30-yard gain, and they scored a touchdown on that. And those were the two touchdowns that Georgia scored. They needed help. But at the end, Notre Dame's defense, three and out, again and again. Very impressive.
Niles Morgan, let's go through the position groups. Defensive line. Dalen Hayes only recorded one tackle, which I was surprised, but I thought just from watching the game, I thought he was getting around and getting after the ball, but just didn't record a whole lot of stats to go along with that. Jay Hayes had a big game, however, 7 tackles.
And he was moving. I mean, he was running guys down from. He was right there.
He was. Tillery recorded 2 quarterback hurries. Saw him force the quarterback out of the pocket. He ended with 5 tackles, and then Trimbetti had 5 tackles and half tackle for loss.
And Bonner was looking. I was pretty impressed with what Bonner was doing. Saw him more than he did in game one, but Tillery continues to impress. He was even getting double teamed out there, and he was still doing stuff. He's definitely improved his intensity, his level of intensity, and is getting things done out there.
Bonner did finish with 1.5 tackles for loss, so active in the backfield.
And even
Myron.
Oh well, yeah, but I was thinking of
Kurt
98, Trimbetti.
Oh, Trimbetti.
He was doing very well.
So yeah.
He was getting after the quarterback, and I think they improved even more than from game since game one, and this defensive line is great.
I know. I thought they were going to be better, or I thought they were being good, but they have blown away what I thought they could be.
Yeah.
Linebackers, I thought they played phenomenal, our 4 linebackers. Niles Morgan was tied with the team leader with 7 tackles. He had a sack, quarterback hurry. And then Coney continued to have a really good game. He had 6 tackles. Martini had 6. And then who am I missing? Oh, Tranquil.
Tranquil.
Yeah, Tranquil had the interception, had 5 tackles, 1.5 tackles for loss, and 1 quarterback hurry. I thought this was maybe...
He should have had another sack.
He should have. He did miss the sack that Niles Morgan picked up then.
Yeah. But these guys played very good. Drew Tranquil was... They've definitely put him in a position to succeed.
The TV announcers even... I think it was a TV commentary where they were talking about, you know, this could actually be possibly an NFL player, and you never would have said that when he was a high school recruit.
Yeah. But that interception that he had was perfect. I mean, it seemed like he talked about it afterwards, too, and he said he knew what they were going to do. Like, he had seen that look before, and he kind of knew what they were going to do.
It was like a Tom Zbikowski play where he's just, I'm more of a man than you are, and I'm going to take the ball away.
His sack, that was a little, he could just, like, missed the guy. You thought he could have veered to the right a little bit, but it went right past the quarterback. But he played very good. Coney was even in at middle linebacker a little bit. It was impressive to see him line up the defensive line. There was one play where they were out of position, and he went up to them, told them something, got Tillery to move over, and then Bonner was still staying there.
It's like Bonner didn't hear that.
They shifted a little bit, but then he was yelling at him, and finally he just like ran up and like slapped him on the butt and like told him to move over, and then he moved. But it was good to see that he's confident. He knows what he's doing,
yeah,
and he's confident. He did have – there's a couple plays. Was it the one touchdown run where he kind of took the bad angle?
I'm trying to think.
He should have done a little better on that. But he did good. Niles Morgan, you're kind of looking for things to. I'm not trying to pick out all the negative stuff about him, but the only thing that he did, there was one play where it almost looked like him and who's the second guy? Was it Coleman? The corner? They backed off. It almost looked like they backed away from
the running back. Or? Oh, when there was a group of them around.
There was a group
tackle.
Of them, and they kind of backed away from it. But, no, these guys played great. I think you got to keep the. With Coney and Martini, keep rotating like that. And
I really like the rotation they have. I mean, you got 4. Even Blal played some, too. And did Tranquil play safety some?
I don't remember seeing
the color,
him as a safety. They talked about it, but I don't think he ever did.
On one play, we had Tavon, Greer. I thought we had all or I thought we had four linebackers out there, and so I thought maybe then he was playing safety. I thought it was on his interception where there was Bilal was out there, but where Tranquil was out there too. But I might not have seen it right.
Yeah.
On the cornerbacks, we saw Watkins get targeted a lot. He did, was tied. He had seven tackles, had a bunch of great open field tackles. Did a really good job of wrapping up. He had two pass breakups, and he did have a quarterback hurry.
And the one play on the pass break, he was like looking, he was turning around and watching the ball too. Like, we often fuss about guys not turning around, but he was doing it for a while. They did good. Julian Love got banged up a little bit, but then he was good to go. I mean, it wasn't anything major, but it's just good to see these guys making tackles and not letting guys get away. And these were top running backs they were doing. I mean, mm-hmm. you'd almost been okay if they'd have missed a couple just because of who they were trying to tackle, but they did great.
And then Love also had he had six tackles, didn't record any pass breakups. And then safety, Nick Coleman.
Well, Brian Kelly mentioned this was the best game he's ever played.
He was involved a lot in the tackling game.
And that was a complaint we had with him. Remember when he came in against Ohio State?
Yeah.
They scored a touchdown. One of the first touchdowns was he came in and he completely missed and they scored. And you just knew when he was going into the game that there's going to be a couple missed tackles. So he's made a huge improvement.
And we saw Studstill in there. They had their rotation back there as well. Studstill had three tackles. And then Jalen Elliott recorded one tackle.
Isn't it crazy that we were so worried about the safety? Before the season started, we were so worried about the safety position. And the offensive line didn't have much to say because they're playing, you know, they're just so great. And here we are playing a good Georgia team, and it's completely opposite.
But it's because of strength. I mean, I think the defense is really good, and Georgia's offense is decent. But I think this Georgia front is just phenomenal, and they just made our offensive line look, they made them look human.
Yeah, but finally, we have a defense.
Yeah. Even though if you were hoping for undefeated season, a shot at, which, yeah, there is still a shot at getting into the playoff, but not a realistic one. But there is still a lot of good takeaway from this because our defense, I think, is turning into a legitimate top 25 defense probably.
And they're going to look really good against Boston College next week. So.
All right, that is all we've got. Oh, Randall, who won our pound of coffee from Main Street Roasters?
Well, Bob Miller from Bulldog Illustrated was the winner. We had him on the podcast last week, and I think it was the same prediction he made on the podcast. I can't remember, but he actually tweeted us right before the game when we tweeted out about the score prediction, and he predicted 23-21 Georgia. So that's very close. So congrats to Bob. You don't like seeing it go to the opposing team's fans, but hey, when Notre Dame loses a game like this, it is what it is.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. We will be back Wednesday with our preview for Notre Dame at Boston College.
One of the good things about having so many fans at Notre Dame, they said the average ticket price was at $1,137.22. But even if you go less than that, you know, they put millions of dollars into the South Bend area. Yeah, that was just for the tickets. So they were around all weekend. So they boosted the economy.
All right. That's one positive.
And I don't know how it was due. We've talked about it before, but after seeing all that red, I feel even more of a need to have like a green out or something at Notre Dame.
Notre Dame needs to do a better job of color coordinating with the fans, what color they should be wearing.
And it's hard to do because
you just pick a color.
But how are you even going to let everybody know? Like, I just feel like the Notre Dame fan, it's different than at another school.
I don't know. I feel like there'd be a way just on social media that you could promote this is what we're doing. Or give t-shirts away.
Yeah.
As fans are walking in, give them a t-shirt.
They can afford that. But I think it would have to be green just because you can do a blue, it's not as obvious.
Blue would probably just look kind of like black.
Or even, what do you think about the Georgia had pom-pom, like the red pom-pom, and the stuff they're waving, which makes a huge difference too. I mean, you could even do something like that. I mean,
maybe like some cloverhead foam hats.
There you go. The closest thing they come to is the late from Manti Te'o, the Hawaiian lays.
Oh, yeah.
But somehow we need to start something like that, a green out or something.
I agree.
Anyways.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. We will be back Wednesday with our preview. Until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.